Today is a day for truth.
Black and blue, God versus man.
Day versus night.
Or Midwest gods.
I've been excited before, just because Ben Affleck got picked to do Batman. I'm curious to see how he does.
The stormtroopers used to be bad at shooting, and now they're not. You know, something like that.
Like the CG of Jurassic Park versus the CG of Lost World, because
blah, 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 blah.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
My whole life has led to this moment. I'm in heaven.
Hello, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys, the flagship show. We had a couple specials. We had a Star Wars special. We had a SummerSlam reaction special. But now we're back with the regular show. And all four of us are once again here. It's a miracle. So we have with me tonight, we have Anke Bauer. How are you,
What's
sir?
Up? I'm good.
Good, good. John Z, or the Dirty Jay-Z, as we've come to know him. How are you, sir?
Aloha, aloha.
Aloha. And finally, we also have Brian B with us. Brian, say hi.
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, sir. All right, gentlemen. Before we get started tonight, we had some breaking news come across the wire, unfortunately, in this case. John, why don't you fill us in? Jay-Z, I should say. John Z.
At 6:23 p.m. earlier today on August 30th, whenever we're broadcast, so it's August 30th at 6:23 p.m., we just got the news that legendary horror filmmaker Wes Craven passed away today after his battle with brain cancer. Craven's first film, Last House on the Left, was what established him as the horror icon that he is, as well as his follow-up film, Hills Have Eyes. But he's probably most known for his 1984 film, A Nightmare on Elm Street, and also for his rejuvenation career in the mid-90s. And even on a side note, outside of horror film, he actually directed Meryl Streep to an Oscar nomination in 1999's Music of the Heart. So, this is a man that has had quite the legacy over the past 40 years. At least one film every decade, he's had something that came out and has reestablished the strength of his career. He was with his family when he passed away in his Los Angeles home.
Incredibly sad news. Our condolences go out to his family and his friends, and I know we're all saddened by his loss. I mean, here's a tremendous... I've never been a big horror buff, but how can you not give credit to the man who created Nightmare on Elm Street? And whether you loved it or hated it, the Scream genre kind of changed horror movies in the 90s as well. So definitely a groundbreaker. John, what else? I think you have some things you want to add to about his career.
Yeah, in the 70s, where he got his start, his films Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes are like... they are legendary status. They help show that. I mean, they were one of the first few that actually established like really low budget horror filmmaking and showed how he can like just excise suspense from just simple setups and situations and just like having raw 16mm film stock. And he really set a new standard in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's just really amazing. Funny note, his movie, The Hills Have Eyes, there's a poster for that in the basement in The Evil Dead, and it's kind of a tribute. In Nightmare on Elm Street, he actually had a poster for Evil Dead in Nancy's room in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Evil Dead. There always seems to be some kind of connection to every horror movie with that. I don't know why, but Anke Bauer, what'd you think about the passing of Mr. Craven there?
Well, I'm saddened by it. I really got into the Scream movies. I really enjoyed that. It took me back into the horror genre that I was away from for a while. And you can see across the horror genre that people tried to mimic the way that he was able to bring like a comedy effect into the horror flick. Like he even has that new, it stemmed off under that MTV series Scream. And that's taken off really well too.
Yeah. Good point. Birchie, thoughts on, Mr. Craven's passing?
Well, I will say that I know that this is, kind of came as a shock because, You know, he is known in the horror genre as, I like to phrase it, I would coin him as the king of horror. I guess you could say from a movie standpoint. And, you know, he's done a number of different things over the years, as John Z pointed out. And I have a lot of respect for Craven. I know you might be shocked by hearing me say that, but I think he, the things that he created over the years, Nightmare on Elm Street, which was very well known by a lot of people, I think a lot of people, and for lack of a better term, copycat his production style. And I think that there's his work within the horror genre will be missed. I would not be remiss to say that myself. I have seen a number of movies of his, even outside of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. You know, of course, my wife's a big horror fan, so. But it is a sad passing, and I will give credit where credit is due, because he was the king of horror, in my opinion.
Again, our condolences here. We're all very saddened and shocked. I had no idea. Apparently, he had brain cancer, like John alluded to. I had no idea. So, passing of a legend. And I know there are some that, you know, would probably say he probably deserves maybe an Oscar even to go that far. But however, moving on, speaking of Oscars, John has been working hard on his already talking the Oscars and very early Oscar news and predictions possibly, John? I don't know.
Well, I always look at it every year, and this is one time that I'd say like just 9 movies off the bat we could pretty much lock for Best Picture. I mean, the only thing that they have going against them is if they come out and get incredibly terrible reviews. Kicking off the list, I'm going to start off with David O. Russell's movie Joy, which comes out on Christmas. It's got Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, follows 4 generations of a family, and the woman that grows up to the matriarch of the family's company. David O. Russell's last 3 movies have all been Best Picture nominees. It got started in 2010 with The Fighter, which got Christian Bale and Melissa Leo their Oscars. 2012, Silver Linings Playbook got Jennifer Lawrence her Oscar. And then the year after, with American Hustle, he got it was an amazing amount of nominations for that movie. And he's actually the only director since 1978 that has directed it's the first time a director has actually directed a Best Actor, Actress, Supporting Actor, and Supporting Actress in a film to get nominated, which that hasn't been done since Coming Home. So David O. Russell definitely has a very solid reputation, and Joy is definitely going to be one that you can probably expect to be a Best Picture nominee. Another one, coming off of last year's Best Picture and Director and all those other wins for Birdman, the Mexican director Alejandro González Iñárritu, don't ask me to say that again, has a film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy called The Revenant, which comes out in January. It's about DiCaprio plays a frontiersman out for revenge after being left for dead in the wilderness during the 1820s. I personally was not a humongous fan of Birdman. I always called it the Britney Spears of movies for me. Everybody else was going crazy over it. I took one look at it and, like, I wouldn't throw it out of bed. Those are my thoughts.
No, I still haven't seen it.
I saw it. I didn't think it. I thought it was okay. I mean,
Exactly. It's not a Best Picture, though.
That was the one movie last year that I actually went and saw just because of the hype over the Oscars of it, just to see if it was any good. So, but yeah, it was all right.
On a technical standpoint, I love the attempt at one take. It's clearly not a one take movie, but it really tried to make you think that it was a one take. But the trailer for it makes me think that it's going to be exactly the same thing, where he tries to make another 2-hour one-take film again. But, again, the thing that's going to be pushing real hard this year is the directors coming off of a Best Picture win last year, and DiCaprio is already getting more talk of, is it his time to win? This could be his time to win, and a lot of people are pushing for him, and so if he's going to win, a Best Picture nomination would make it solidified. Going on with that, speaking of coming off of last year's win, Best Actor Eddie Redmayne has a film coming out November 27th called The Danish Girl, in which it's from director Tom Hooper, from another Best Picture winner, The King's Speech, and Les Miserables. It's the story of a transgender love story set during the 1920s about artists Einar and Gerne Wegener, and Einar's transformation into Lily Elbe. It's the kind of story that the Academy loves. It's a period piece, it's a romance, it's, you know, it's taking up a cause on their film. They love those kind of movies, so of course I expect it to be a big show, you know, contender, especially with the prestige it has behind it. And speaking of prestige, you can't look at the Oscars without looking at the next Steven Spielberg film. October 16th, we have Bridge of Spies, which marks the fourth collaboration between Spielberg and actor Tom Hanks, in which Hanks plays a lawyer recruited to rescue a pilot that's detained by Soviet Russia during the Cold War. This is going to be an interesting one because we actually have... Spielberg is actually directing a movie from a Coen Brothers script, which is kind of odd because the Coen Brothers kind of keep their scripts to themselves and are known for directing everything they write, but for some reason they penned a script for Steven Spielberg. Well, not for some reason, it's Steven Spielberg. So,
you think Tom Hanks might have had something to do with that, maybe? Or, cause he's
probably.
Been
yeah.
awfully big into the whole war, you know, the just HBO documentaries and whatnot.
From Earth to the Moon. Yeah, From Earth to the Moon, Band of Brothers, Pacific, all of them co-produced by Hanks and Spielberg. And also, don't forget, we've got another Tom Hanks and Coen Brothers collaboration. They both were in probably the Coen Brothers' lowest-reviewed movie, The Lady Killers. But another interesting note is this is actually going to be the first movie since 1985's Color Purple that Steven Spielberg has not had scored by John Williams.
Really? Who's doing the score for it?
Thomas Newman, who I'm completely fine with. I've been a fan of Newman's work since I first heard it in The Shawshank Redemption.
Okay. What else has he done, do you know? That sounds familiar to me, but I can't place anything.
Oh, where to begin? He did American Beauty, The Green Mile, Wall-E, Road to Perdition. I mean, the man is a very prolific and very, very good composer. I couldn't imagine anyone better.
I imagine Mr. Williams is busy with Star Wars, so.
And speaking of another prestige film, another person who his films always get good recognition is Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
Oh no, he's back.
He's back again and taking on the Western genre for a second time after 2012 Django Unchained, and again, another Best Picture nomination, and a second screenplay win for Mr. Tarantino. He teams up again with Samuel L. Jackson, Christoph Waltz, Kurt Russell, Channing Tatum, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, Demian Bashir, and Bruce Dern. Where to begin? Tarantino makes a cast on the film. His ensembles are always flawless. But another interesting note, and speaking of composers, and looking back on his films, we always know Tarantino's films for having incredible soundtracks. He always knows how to put a really cool song and a really cool moment in the film. But this is going to be his first movie that actually has a composer.
Hmm.
And it's the legendary Ennio Morricone.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't he the same one... The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the Spaghetti
The Good, the
Western
Bad, and the Ugly, yep.
Yeah.
Did all
wow.
of those, the Untouchables, which is funny because you can definitely tell that Sergio Leone's movies have a humongous influence on Tarantino's films, so
that's
I think it's going to be incredibly exciting.
That's an interesting mix right there, just taking that kind of epic music kind of thing, just from his past work and putting it with Tarantino. That's a Frankenstein monster creation. Interesting to see.
And Tarantino has even used some of his music cues in his films before, so, I mean, this is the first time he's actually going to have Morricone writing. According to IMDb, Morricone is listed as the composer for it, which is the first time you can see a composer for a Tarantino film.
Now, if you've seen the trailer for the movie, April 8th, and Tarantino's films I've always been impressed with, at least the first couple of them, I should say. but if you've seen the trailer for Hateful Eight, it's actually being released on Christmas Day in a limited number of theaters in 70mm format.
Really?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Huh. Now, the one thing I'm concerned about is apparently I also read this article last week that Star Wars is apparently going to be taking up every IMAX theater available.
800 of them.
Right, for an entire month, yeah.
And the sad thing is there are some theaters, like the Cincinnati area, that do not have the luxury of a 70mm screen. You have to drive up to, I believe, Chicago, or at least 4 or 5 hours away to get to a 70mm screen. So Star Wars, please give us back an IMAX screen for one weekend so we can appreciate Hateful Eight.
Nope.
I can wait till after the month's over.
Yep.
Give us one weekend.
I'm kidding. All right, John, so what else? Got anything else?
Got a few more. We have this movie called Suffragette, which has been getting it's got a small little reputation building up for it right now. It's the first major film from director Sarah Gavron. Her first actual film was 2007's Brick Lane. And the movie centers around the first members of the women's suffrage movement and how they were forced underground by the state just because they wanted to continue their movement. You have cast members Carey Mulligan, Helena Bonham Carter, and the incomparable Meryl Streep.
So I was going to say, where's Meryl Streep at if it's that
right
kind
there.
Of movie?
Right there. So she's thrown in the mix. Carey Mulligan, I mean, we have two other previous Academy Award nominees in there. We have three-time Academy Award winner Meryl Streep. The subject matter has been incredibly timely this year. This year there's been a strong, strong support for equal rights for women, so this is the kind of film that, if marketed right, and if the film is released properly, and if it lives up to its, it will probably find its way into the Oscars. We have another film to watch out for. October 9th is the movie Steve Jobs. There couldn't be a force... There's not a stronger force for the Oscars this year. You have an Aaron Sorkin screenplay. You have Danny Boyle of 127 Hours and Slumdog Millionaire directing. You have Rudin producing. Scott Rudin even got the incredibly awful, extremely loud, and incredibly close nominated. So the fact that he's attached to it, it's going to be great. And the fact that you have Michael Fassbender playing Steve Jobs. Fassbender is amazing in everything he's in, so it's just... Everything has lined up for this movie.
Do you think it's going to be rushed, though? Considering Jobs hasn't only been gone, a year and a half, right? Maybe two tops?
Aaron Sorkin and Danny Boyle behind it. Sorkin wrote The Social Network back in 2010 when Facebook was only 2 or 3 years old.
Hmm.
I mean, the man knows how to write a script incredibly fast and make it incredibly timely. Danny Boyle... The guy that's given us movies like 28 Days Later, Slumdog Millionaire, Trainspotting. The man knows how to make a good independent film. And if he's given confines, he can still work incredibly well with them.
Mm.
And again, Scott Rudin, I keep going back to that awful movie, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. If he can get that movie nominated, the man can get anything nominated.
Okay.
So, yeah. October 9th, Steve Jobs. It's a movie that if it doesn't get nominated, something seriously went wrong with that film, like casting Ashton Kutcher.
Boy. Okay.
All right. November 6th, there's a movie called Trumbo, based on Hollywood writer Dalton Trumbo and his struggles about being blacklisted during the 1940s. Trumbo is one of the greatest Hollywood screenwriters of all time, plain and simple. The man won an Oscar in 1956 for The Brave Ones, wasn't allowed to be up on stage to accept his Oscar, and his script for the movie Roman Holiday won Best Screenplay back in 1953, but because of his blacklisting, he was actually left off the ballot, and he wouldn't get his Oscar till 40 years later after he passed away. And you have Breaking Bad's Bryan Cranston playing him, so... It's the subject matter, the cast looks amazing. You also have, like, Elle Fanning, John Goodman. It's an amazing cast lined up for the movie. Only thing going against it is the director. the director by the name of Jay Roach, who we may not be familiar with if I name him, but I'm sure if I say the movies Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, or the Austin Powers trilogy, we know what kind of movies Jay Roach is known for. So this
hey,
is
I like Austin Powers now. Come on.
I'm not saying anything against him, but I don't
yeah,
think
baby.
Austin Powers would be a Best Picture contender. So it's just... We'll see if Jay Roach has it in him to be a good, serious director.
Oh, come on, John. You know, Fat Bastard is like the greatest character ever. I'm sexy. Look at my sexy butt. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I was actually just reading some stuff while John was talking about. Apparently, Jay Roach has done two political dramas. Really Game Change. And put him, I mean... standards. He's done some decent stuff over the years. But then again, he has directed Borat as well, so...
Borat?
Directed what?
Borat?
No, I'm sorry.
No, I didn't.
He was one of the executives or something.
I was just getting ready to do my Borat impression. Oh, well. All right. So much for that.
Yep. Game Change and Recount were pretty good HBO films. Mystery Alaska. Interesting. And, of course, Dinner for Schmucks and the Campaigns. So let's see. Because if you get him directing an HBO film, he seems to be okay. Let's see what he does when he directs a Hollywood film.
Well, sounds like he's got decent people around him.
Hope so.
Got good material to work with, so we'll have to. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now.
Yeah, okay. I'm putting it on my list, so I'm definitely giving it the benefit of the doubt myself here. And last but not least, a movie I have a very personal connection to, the Todd Haynes film Carol is given limited release November 20th. The 50s romance story between Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. That is a story about how their romance is only held back by the confines of being restrained in the 1950s. I've worked on the movie. I am an extra in it. I read the script. I have a very personal connection to it. I really felt proud working on the movie, and I was incredibly happy when I heard that it got to premiere at Cannes. Rooney Mara picked up Best Actress at the Cannes Film Festival, and currently it's got like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, so it's got a very... very strong fan base support. Well, not even fan base, but it's got the critic support behind it, and I can definitely tell you it is a gorgeous looking movie.
Well, I know you can't talk about it right now because you're contractually obligated not to, but I would love to hear some of your behind the scenes stories on that one, so I'm sure they're pretty good.
I will wait for a few months. I'm not.
Come on, spoiler alert time. Damn it. No, I'm kidding.
No, cannot. I have a reputation. I have to keep building up amongst myself.
Okay. Well, after listening, I tell you the one that really that whole list that you came up with, the one that really stands out for me again, it's the Hank Spielberg. I love all that. I loved everything that they put out that Hanks has done. Pretty much, I don't know, since Forrest Gump, maybe before that. That and you put Spielberg.
Yeah, how could you forget Bachelor Party?
Oh well, yeah, Bachelor Party. That's a cult classic, right? So I'm real interested in that. I love war movies and the whole genre per se. So I guess if there is even one, you could even call that. But that sounds very interesting to me, and I could definitely see that being an Oscar contender. I don't know if it'd be an Oscar winner necessarily in the current political environment we live in, but that sounds very interesting to me, and one I was unaware of until you brought it up, to be perfectly honest. Ankenbauer, any of those sound good to you, sir?
I saw the trailer for the one with the guy from I just saw the trailer for it. What was the name? The guy that played in Breaking Bad?
Trumbo, Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that one. That one looked decent. I haven't really seen trailers for anything else, but that one looked actually good.
Yeah, apparently, all trailers are available online. So, if you get a chance, everyone, look them up. Hateful Eight, definitely
John,
exciting. Bridges of Spies is good. Yes.
Yeah, if you could Why don't you put a list of them up on our page so that everybody can look?
There you go, on the Facebook page. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right, I'll get a list of those. And really quick, I'd like to touch on a few that are currently in release that I think also have really good chances and probably shouldn't be ignored. Okay. Top of the list right now is Inside Out. Could be the first Pixar film since 2010's Toy Story 3 to get in the list now that there's more than five nominees, and this currently is considered one of the best written movies of all time. It's one of the most emotionally powerful and deeply symbolic films that Pixar has ever released.
It may be the best Pixar movie ever. I took my 5-year-old to see it, and yeah, I can't speak highly enough about that one. It's incredible. It really is. Funny, emotional, but it's awesome. It really is. So,
it's perfectly written.
Yeah.
Another one to consider is if the Academy wants to consider some independent films, and if they want to go genre, they could look at the science fiction film Ex Machina. It's a movie that utilized the science fiction genre as a way to examine, again, what it means to love, what it means to be a person, and it actually goes into what the basis of the science fiction genre really is.
I actually saw that one. That was really good.
And currently, the best-reviewed film of the year, believe it or not, with a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 89% average on Metacritic, is Mad Max Fury Road.
Hmm.
Now, take those numbers into consideration when looking at last year's Best Picture winner. Birdman had a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 88% Metacritic average. Fury Road has the most passionate supporters behind it, and they would love to see that movie nominated for Best Picture. It is endlessly exciting, wildly inventive. You want to look at Suffragette as a movie to show support for women's movement. Fury Road even has incredible subtext about the women's movement as well, about women not being objects. It is quite possibly one of the most perfect summer films I have ever seen.
Yeah, didn't you call it the most visually stunning? Because I was kind of taken back by that, because I was like, I don't know, I was never into the Mad Max thing, so I didn't really go see it. I'm probably going to see it, on my TV screen, unfortunately, but...
Find the biggest screen you can find for it, because it is a feast for the eyes. It is beautifully shot, beautifully composed. If watching J.J. Abrams, the Star Wars behind the scenes, and seeing him, using models, using sets, gets you excited, this entire movie is all stunts, all practical effects. The cars that are demolished are really the cars in front of the camera being just destroyed. You have these stunt people doing the most insane stunts I've seen on film. It, like watching Lord of the Rings, it made me feel like I wanted to go to Australia just to make movies.
Wow, that's pretty strong. Brian B., what any of those stand out for you? It sounded like you really were into the Quentin Tarantino, which caught my attention as well. Any other ones?
No, not really. I mean, I've been more of a Tarantino fan. Reservoir Dogs was one of my favorites from him. I really haven't. I've been kind of out of the loop. I haven't seen... this has been the first that I've heard of any of these movies to get on this truth.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like John's got some work to do on her Facebook page then. So moving from the big screen to the small screen, it's become kind of our TV guy, our TV writer, our TV person. Anke Bauer, what do you got for us this week, sir?
I wanted to touch base on four of the shows, Flash, Fear the Walking Dead, Gotham, and Arrow, just briefly. So I saw a recent article that said it was confirmed. Flash comes back on October 6th, airs on Tuesdays at 8. They said that Iris is going to take a bigger role as the leader of Team Flash, formerly held by Harrison Wells. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? In my opinion, I hated the character Iris played early. Towards the end of towards the end of the show, end of the season, she kind of picked up her game. So I'm curious to see how it's going to play out. But I'm not sure it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. Watching Arrow, we've seen where Felicity Smoke tried to take over the reins of Team Arrow, and that didn't go so well for the group. So I'm curious how that plays out for Flash. Let's see, Gotham. You know, this looks to be the year of the villain. So we're going to see the Penguin take more, you know, develop more character. The Joker, looks like he's going to get more backstory on that. You know, am I excited about this season of Gotham? I'm not sure if I'm as excited as I was when I heard it was first coming out for the first season. But we'll see. I do like the characters. I like the way the TV series is written. But several of the episodes it felt long and drawn out.
I'll give you that. Yeah, it was kind of drawn out a little bit. But I am interested to see how they do the Joker, because I've been very pleased with how they've done the Penguin, as well as
the Riddler.
The Riddler. Yeah, it's been very well done. Very, very well done. John, I'm sorry. I think I'm going to cut you off there.
Oh, you're fine. Actually, my wife and I, we just got caught up on like the last four episodes this past week. And, these last couple episodes focusing on just the Penguin and the Riddler. And if we want to divulge like what Bruce Wayne discovers, I'm just going to leave it at what Bruce Wayne discovers at the end was enough to get the viewers incredibly excited for the next season. And yeah, seeing that trailer to see it's the season of the villains is exciting.
The only criticism I have of the show is, and I've kind of come over to your side of the force on this one, John. It's what's her name, Selina Kyle. I don't like what they're doing with her. It's real, I don't know, it's underused maybe, or it's very, I don't know what the word would be. I know she's only a child in this series, but still, it's kind of, I don't know.
Out of place?
They kind of, they it's like they don't know what to do with her. I don't know. At least that's the way I look at it. But that's my only critic of the show. Otherwise, I love it.
If I had to say my criticism of the show, it's a lot of it. Some of the episodes seem incredibly filler, and that's been, like, the Balloon Man episode alone was... The Balloon Man episode is hard to defend from that show.
I agree. I agree with that one. Like, they were stretching to find an off-topic villain to fill a spot.
Right, but when the show hits its mark, like, the moments they hit with the Riddler, like, the way they wrapped up his arc at the end of the season was kind of creepy. Like, not even kind of creepy. It was incredibly creepy to watch his transformation.
Yep.
Pure genius, though, if you ask me, because if I was going to picture in my mind how the Riddler becomes the Riddler, yeah, kind of like that. Yep. So, not to give away any spoilers.
Well, the actor, I think it just really goes into like how well the actor pulled off his performance, too. It was just... And I think that's what I like about this new Penguin. I think it's the best embodiment. I mean,
yeah.
I think he actually, well, to say he beats Danny DeVito is an easy task, but I'd go so far as, like, even Burgess Meredith.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's the first dark, realistic dark twist on the Penguin, in my opinion. If you were going to have a Penguin in real life, okay, then maybe they take a few liberties with him, but for the most part, that's, yeah.
it's like the Penguin in the Arkham games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's psychotic but cool, but very calculated, devious, twisted. You know, brilliant. You know, so.
Sorry, Mark. Go on with the rest of your.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's what it's here for, just to talk about. My next one is Fear of the Walking Dead. So I just got done watching the second episode. So the first episode was. And what most everybody was saying on Facebook was it was slow. But as the first episode came to an end, you could see it picking up steam. And, you know, was everybody just so used to the original Walking Dead and how fast-paced it was, and, you know, walkers in every episode, and there's always action. You know, how is that going to translate into the new spinoff series, where they show how it all started? And then in the second episode, I would say it definitely kept that momentum going, but it still seems slow in comparison to the original series. And I'm curious to see, they said that it broke record, the pilot episode broke records for one of the most watched premieres, and I'm curious to see if how the second episode did with people who watched the first one and then said, nope, I'm not watching, it's too slow for me, or whatever. I'm curious to see how the second episode fares as far as viewer participation. I will give my favorite line of the whole thing, was when civilization ends, it ends fast. And I would say that episode definitely portrayed that. It was pretty good.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, have anybody else watched it yet?
Not yet, but so I'm assuming that there's just society just breaks down overnight and it's just pure panic in the streets kind of
Feel. Very similar to that. It actually plays, it plays a lot on, like, almost kind of like current events, if you will, as far as people's reaction to police force and stuff like that. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to spoil any of it, but it does have a very realistic, like, wow, I could actually see this happening tomorrow.
Right.
And how would I react to that kind of situation?
So are they using any, like the preppers that we, you know, are they using any of that kind of genre in it, or is it just more police?
Yes, you can see that there are some preppers who are getting prepared, but you can see that there's also a lot of keeping it out of the news by, you know, the government, so it doesn't, to not cause a panic or anything.
Right. Trying to keep it under wraps. Right.
Yep. But I definitely recommend at least watching the first two episodes before you make your opinion. If you just watch the first one, I would say you're probably just going to get, I'm done with it. But typically when I start watching a show, I'll give it at least two or three episodes and then make my decision.
Right.
If later on down the line somebody says the show is amazing and everything else, then I might go back and start watching again. But typically I'll at least give it two or three episodes.
Yeah.
So anybody else want to talk about The Walking Dead or keep going?
I haven't watched it yet, but it sounds interesting. It's starting to, you know, pique my interest. So.
Yep. John or Birchie, anything?
I don't have any opinions on The Walking Dead. I just haven't watched anything recently.
Okay. John Z, you're the, we'll call you the zombie expert. What do you think?
You guys are going to be kind of shocked at this, but I haven't seen a single episode of The Walking Dead this last season. I actually kind of got out of the loop.
Really?
I think the show itself just, yeah, I think The Walking Dead for me just kind of lost my interest. I think just... the main character, I can't remember the main character's name, but I just, watching him with his son and everything, pining over his wife, and just, I lost it. I couldn't get into it anymore. I think after the moment that Daryl chucked the grenade into the tank, and you knew the moment that Daryl single-handedly took on a tank and beat the tank, was the moment of, like, the apex of coolness for that show for me. And I just, ever since then, I just kind of got out of it. The show just kind of lost interest for me, and which is sad because I've been a huge zombie fan ever since high school. Like, I would sneak away and watch the NC-17 cuts of Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, and I loved them. I thought they were the coolest things ever, and I became like the zombie group in high school and college. They're just like, oh, well, we kind of like them, but there's not a whole lot of people that talk about these. And then around the time that The Walking Dead premiered, zombies became the hugest thing ever. There were zombies on the back of people's cars. Zombies became the pop culture. Suddenly what was underground was now part of the mainstream, and it's fine for me, but for some reason, it just, the more popular it got, the something about the appeal of it saying that, for me, it's always about the Romero zombies, and the fact that the zombies of Romero films are always about how the mainstream can take over and consume the world around you. And that's what the zombies were always a representative of in his films. And ironically, that's happened today.
All right, Ankenbauer, what else we got there, sir?
Okay, and then my last thing I wanted to touch base on, we haven't really seen too much from the Arrow as far as any kind of leaked footage or anything else. And they said that they're getting ready to release the season premiere trailer, the teaser. They said it looks, it's going to, the guy who wrote it said it's going to break the internet. I'm not sure if that was just a joke or what, but I am excited to see it. But my question is will we see Green Lantern this season? With as closely tied as Green Arrow is to Green Lantern in a lot of the comics and a lot of storylines, you know, are we finally going to see Green Lantern? They've kind of joked about it or teased at it a little bit with Diggle, which is the black guy on the show. They kind of joked about it with him, saying he was going to get an outfit this year. So, you know, is he going to be the John Stewart character? You know, like what we've seen in some of the other Justice League stuff.
Right.
So what do you guys think? Would you want to see Green Lantern, or do you want to keep seeing that show go in a different direction?
I would think it could stand on its own, but if you're going to do it, make sure you do it right. You know, honor the history, especially if you're going to take it in a different direction, at least honor what's been done in the past, you know, before you go completely AWOL with it. I don't know, considering we're getting ready to, you know, I don't know if there is even such a thing as the DC Cinematic Universe, but there soon will be in some shape or form. I don't know if that would conflict with whatever they've got in mind. I don't know. That would be my two cents on it.
Yeah, that is one thing that I've heard, because they asked Stephen Amell if they were going to have Batman on Arrow. Because Bruce Wayne and Oliver Queen were tied together a little bit in the storylines.
Right.
And he said, we might have our version of Bruce Wayne, but more than likely not have Batman due to the fact of the DC, the TV universe and the movie universe.
And the movie universe crossing over. Yeah. Yeah, that was, maybe. Well, that was always the thing with Smallville, was they could never put Batman on there, because of what was going on with Christian Bale and that whole trilogy. So that's why they ended up putting Green Arrow on Smallville. So, which is what I think led to a Arrow series on its own, like a reboot. So,
yep.
Maybe they'll have the kid from Gotham crossover.
Yeah.
I don't know if Fox and CW get along that well. We'll see. Or I guess just call it CBS too, because that's what it is, you know. So
yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like we got some interesting stuff going on in the TV universe out there, especially comic book wise and hero wise. And I'm ready. I'm ready for season two on Gotham, and I might try The Flash. I checked out that one episode, and I was somewhat impressed with what I saw. So. If I get time, I might set the DVR and see what I like, see if I can get into Flash as well. So.
Yep, you definitely should.
Copy that. So staying in the comic book universe, Brian B., who's become our Deadpool fanatic, I believe has some more that he'd like to talk about tonight as far as the Deadpool movie and the Deadpool character and in general. Sir, what do you got for us tonight, Brian?
Well, I just I saw an article, which actually probably about a week or two ago. I'm just still a little bit concerned about the Deadpool movie. And it's a couple of legitimate reasons. One of which is the fact that, you know, the structural integrity of the fourth wall. Back to the audience, but also the fact of Ryan Reynolds has a pretty lousy comic book track record.
Okay.
You know, he's been in Green Lantern. He was in Blade Trinity. You know, X-Men Wolverine.
To be fair, though, he had the best line in Blade Trinity.
Go ahead, Brian.
If you look at Ryan Reynolds' track record as a comic book, he was RIPD. Does anybody remember RIPD back from 2013?
Yeah,
that bombed at the box office.
I think I was one of the three people in the movie that actually seen that movie.
You know, it's a non-Marvel movie. I mean, look at it. I mean, 20th Century Fox is producing it. We saw what happened with Fantastic Four, which... And I actually looked this up online while you guys were talking about some of the TV stuff. If you look at all of the superhero movies that are coming out between now and July of 2019, Deadpool is the only movie out of that entire group of movies that is being released in February. And if you know anything about the movie industry, January and February are usually not really great months to release a movie.
So
technically, January is actually January was when movies like Zero Dark Thirty saw their wide release, because what studios do is they'll release them in two screens December to qualify for Oscars, but they'll give them January and February pushes for Oscar releases.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, that's when you have a lot of your horror movies released.
Well, typically that's reserved for the spring, like any. Thing like March or April. That's the fallout, like September and October.
But go ahead, Brian. Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
I just don't have confidence in Deadpool doing anything in February.
Okay. Well, just to play devil's advocate, do you think it might be because there is such a saturation of comic book movies that maybe they're trying to find, you know, a period that's not as, you know, going to be saturated with comic books, kind of something that'll stand on its own in the comic book world, maybe, in the, you know, because we're so bombarded, as you like to point out. Just
well,
play
I mean,
advocate.
But, you know? But I honestly don't. I don't know. I mean, if you look, I think this has been posted on our page. Maybe it hasn't, but I've seen online. But if you look at starting with Ant-Man going to Marvel's Inhumans through July 2019, you've got Superman, Civil War in May of 2016, Apocalypse in 2016, Doctor Strange, July of 2016. You see the pattern here?
Right.
It's the only movie in February.
Well, I just
don't have any confidence for it.
Well, I think the reason why that it's being released in February, I mean, Brian, me and you talked about it. I think it's because they wanted it to not have to go against any of the other what are going to be probably popular movies.
Exactly.
So that way there is a movie out there that they can actually make a lot of movie, because if they released it anywhere near Star Wars, it's done. If they released it anywhere near the DC Justice League movie, it's done.
And also, as of late, February has been typically... February has actually become a very huge month for movies. This current year, we saw the 50 Shades of Grey release. Last year, we saw the release of the Lego movie. each of those movies, was it Lego Movie grossed over $250 million. And I believe, let me look it up right now, the standing for 50 Shades of Grey is $166 million. So February has now become a pretty tentpole year for releasing, actually. Because, actually, that's the thing, is because the markets in February become so saturated, it's actually a really good month to promote some of their higher-budget stuff. March becomes the year that larger-budget films like The Hunger Games, the very first Hunger Games, or, as I'm looking at, 2013, Oz the Great and Powerful was released on March. And
but you're talking about Oz the Great and Powerful. That movie completely bombed.
Which opened to a weekend of almost $80 million.
Yeah, okay. I mean, when you're talking about the whole standpoint of that being a highlight in Sam Raimi's film career, or even for Franco's career.
Well, actually, we're not looking at that. We're actually looking at just like the release of the time period. Because if the fan base is there, and if the release date is completely open, which February is, and Deadpool has the fan base, and the trailer has actually, amongst its community, gotten a lot of support, it could do very well. It could find its way.
You have a first-time director as well, in the likes of Tim Miller. he's done some creative directing with title sequences, but he hasn't done a movie.
Oh, okay, so I didn't know that. So the director, he's a first-time director. Okay, so so they're kind of throwing maybe they're not throwing a whole lot of emphasis behind it, or maybe they've heard, what was the guy's name again? Miller?
Tim Miller.
Tim Miller, so maybe they're throwing him a bone and just to see what he can do. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think about that, Brian B?
I don't know. I mean, he had a nomination for a short film, but I mean, he's making his director debut with Deadpool. I mean, this is how I'm looking at it. I'm trying to be as completely optimistic as I possibly can. I guess what I was going to say was we presented one film already. And it was just a complete abomination of the character. And now if this movie bombs because he's a first-time director, it's being released in February, you know, two times around, I mean, 20th Century Fox is losing points in my book because now you're doing Fantastic Four again, and it's already bombed again at the box office. I mean, come on.
They also did Days of Future Past.
That's a good counterpoint. I'll give John that one. I don't know. I mean, I understand your concern, especially with the first-time director. If this is really his first movie, his first big time, that would definitely say that's a legitimate concern. Anke Bauer, I'll throw this one your way, sir. What do you think?
Oh no, I think everybody needs a bone throw their way for their first movie. Nobody comes in, like even Wes Craven didn't come in, and I'm sure when he put out his first movie, they were like, this is going to be epic.
It was Last House on the Left.
Right, but I'm saying it, right, but when it came out, he was a first-time director, right?
Yes.
Right, so nobody said, Wes Craven, this is going to be great, because it's Wes Craven. It was his first time directing. Now, looking back at it, we're like, that was a great movie for his first time directing. You know, maybe that's what we're going to see here with Deadpool. Like, well, that was Tim Miller's first movie. You know, look at how great that did, and look at all the other ones he's done down the line. You know, maybe we'll say that in years to come.
Maybe, I don't know. Like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic. I have something good for Deadpool when it comes out in February. But I mean, this movie has been in development hell. This brings up just a point of discussion I'm going to throw out there. Obviously, the movie I'm going to talk about here for a short moment is not any way relation to Deadpool in any way, shape, or form. But I remember as a kid growing up, I play. There was a video game that was popular back in the mid '80s called Spy Hunter, and I remember back in the early 2000s there was talk at Universal of there being a Spy Hunter movie made with The Rock, and intellectual property from the 70s and 80s and turning it into the next fast food movie, if you want to call it that. My correlation and tie-in with both of these was the fact that we saw promotional material for these movies, and then the movie never happened. And what I'm trying to say is that I'm hoping that with Deadpool, that we've seen the trailers for it now, we've seen some of the promotional material, and I just, like I said, I want to be cautiously optimistic. I hope that it does well. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. I don't know. First-time director, 20th Century Fox. You kind of got a little bit of a bad track record there with those two things tying in with one another.
I understand where you're coming from because, you know, if Star Wars Episode 7 even was going with a first-time director, I would be incredibly worried myself. So I know exactly how you're feeling right there. Because it seems like you have a real deep passion for Deadpool, just kind of like I do for Star Wars. So I feel your pain there. That could be a real legitimate point of concern. So was there any other concerns you had about Deadpool there, Brian?
No, that was just the main thing that I was wanting to talk about because, you know, we've seen the two trailers and we've seen the Comic-Con panels, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the movie does great, but like I said, you got a first-time director, you got Ryan Reynolds, who's not got a really good track record playing comic book characters, and so I don't know, I guess we'll see.
Understood, sir, understood. All right. Did you, I think you wanted to talk a little bit of Star Wars too there, Brian B.?
So, I mean, did you guys see anything of this announcement about the product rollouts for Star Wars on September 3rd?
You're talking about Force Friday and the whole toy release. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, 18 hours worth?
Yeah. the whole thing behind that has been the collector part of Star Wars has kind of been in this limbo state since Disney bought them, pretty much. Other than maybe Star Wars Rebels action figures and toys and the Lego part of the market, it's been pretty dull as far as trying to get anything, getting kind of collecting done. This is supposed to be like the grand reintroduction of the Star Wars toy market, the collectors, and as well as for kids out there. It's all part of the build-up to Star Wars Episode 7.
Just thought that it was interesting the fact that they're doing this whole rollout for like a day and a half.
Yeah, there's literally going to be, it's going to be like Midnight Madness at some of these Star Wars stores. I don't think it's actually going to be at midnight, but it's going to be kind of line up, and they're going to have some promotional giveaways, and they're going to get out there, and you're just going to start seeing all the new action figures, all the new toys. And there are people that are crazier Star Wars fans than me that are actually going to these events just to try to get spoiler items for, you know, to get insight into Star Wars Episode 7 and, you know, and everything else that's going on, so... But there are some real collectors out there too. So,
well, I can honestly say that back in the mid '90s, when there was all the hype around the prequels and the special editions being done, I was one of those folks that was collecting and would go out to your Walmart at 3 o'clock in the morning and it would call cherry pick. This was back at the height of, in the 90s, I guess you could say, the height of Kenner and Hasbro in the 90s, where there would be 12 figures in a case, and there'd only be one or two of those figures packed in a case, and it would be folks going out late at night or early in the morning and picking those figures out, and then you'd find them elsewhere on the collector market for 6 to 50 times what they're actually worth.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to
well, it's,
excite it. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to say it's one of the things that I don't know if you guys recall when the special edition came out. There was the theater edition of the Luke Skywalker in his black cloak from the beginning of Return of the Jedi. And it was the same thing as what you could normally buy, but there was a limited number of figures that were given specifically to movie theaters. And that was the fact that they're in the front door of the movie theater and then went back out the back door of the movie theater, and then the figure went for, I don't know, $150 to $200 in the collector's market.
Wow. And
all because it had a little sticker on it that said, Special Theater Edition, Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi cloak material or something.
They always find something just to pump up that value to try to, you know, keep collectors coming and keep them busy, I guess. But that's all part of the industry, mm-hmm. You know. Toys and Star Wars have gone hand in hand since Lucas invented the whole industry, really, when you get right down to it. So,
yeah, that's true.
But moving on from the collector's item, we also have a little bit more Star Wars news I want to highlight. And that was, we kind of talked about it, I think, in the last episode, or maybe it was on Star Wars Breaking News Special. I think it was the Breaking News Special now. We had a movie poster that was released. It's not the official movie poster like I thought it was when we were talking about it in Breaking News, but it was a special one handed out to those at the D23 convention that Disney has every 2 years. And the guy who designed it is the artist. They actually got him out of retirement. He's done quite a few of the, all the original Star Wars trilogy posters. They found him. They asked him to do it. And so he designed this poster. And go back and listen to our Star Wars Breaking News, and we kind of break down the poster itself. But what's interesting is he's read the entire script for Star Wars Episode 7. He's seen half the movie. And basically, he says, I can tell you and the fans this, honest to God, it is far and away probably going to be the best Star Wars you've ever seen. Now, how much of that is hype? Like, how much is that him trying to promote the movie because Disney hired him and he's obviously a Disney employee? Or is this honest to God really true? Is this, if this is a man who's been involved with the original trilogy, has been involved with Lucas and has a rich past history with Star Wars, and hear a man like this quote that quote, say, and again, I'll say it again, I can tell you and the fans this, honest to God, it is far and away probably going to be the best Star Wars you've ever seen, is a fairly incredibly bold statement. And I'm going to throw it out to Enkenbauer first. What do you think, sir?
Like I said before, I like the fact that they're touching base with all the original, they're getting the original movie poster guy, you know, and they're getting the original, the way the movies were made before. I'm really excited. I'm hoping that it's not just hype, that he actually does believe this can be one of the best ones.
Hmm. John Z, what do you think?
I'm a fan of Drew Struzan's work. Sad to say, I wish that it was his poster that it was chosen for the feature.
Hmm. So what do you think about his comment? Do you think there's any validity to it, or do you think he's just playing the corporate hand and you know, doing his masters?
We'll see. I think I'm going to reserve all kind of I'm reserving any kind of judgment until the future actually comes out. I think all the crew is there, the writers are there, the director's there, the cast is there. I'm excited for it, but I will just wait until the movie's released and before I release any judgments, because I'm actually reminded of a funny video that I saw a while back when the I can't remember who actually was one of the actors from the Star Trek series in 1989 promoting Final Frontier, said he believed Final Frontier was the best and most honest representation of the Star Trek universe, and anyone that does not watch Star Trek can tell you that Star Trek V was where the series began to decline.
It's probably one of the worst, yes.
Yes. So, again, I'm reserving all judgment until the film's released. It could be somebody who, like you said, read the script, and the thing is with reading a script is it can be open to any interpretation, because anybody can read it, and it's like a book. Anybody has their mind's eye when they read something, and the shots look different than when a director gets a hold of it, or the representation is different. So we'll see what happens.
Good point. Brian B., what do you think?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm still pretty much on the fence. I mean, I'm probably the least out of the four of us that's really, really looking forward to Star Wars. I've mentioned this to Ankenbauer off the air the other day. There was an article that I read that I really truly agreed with. I read an article that was written on Hitflix.com, a guy who's actually written a number of articles. He's been in the business for 15 years and wrote an article about why he's not interested in a lot of the Star Wars. And he's 45. I'm 40, and he's talking about this whole paradigm shift kind of thing that there's just a lot of different changes. He's got kids that he's raising now. Times change. I mean, you grow up, you mature. There's other things that take precedence in your life. I've kind of gotten to that point in my life too, where it's like, I'm looking forward to it, but as for like I don't have butterflies in my stomach like what I did when the special editions were released. I mean, I'm talking almost 20 years ago, so I was in my 20s back in the mid 90s, and it's like, okay, yeah, it was a different time. Like I said, I'm just, and the thing for me, and I know that J.J. Abrams has done a lot of different stuff out there, but it's now like he's done Star Wars and Star Trek now. I want to be excited, but I'm not. I'm really just throw me under the bus if you want. I don't care. I just don't feel the excitement like what I did when the special editions were released. And I'm not saying that special editions are greater than what's been released in the past. I'm just saying I just don't have the excitement as what I did.
I understand that, and I'm certainly not going to throw you under any bus, sir, under any circumstance. But let me just throw this at you. Let's just keep it at the question I originally asked. Do you think there's any validity to what he's saying? Do you think he's being honest, or do you think maybe he's just being told to say this because he's getting paid?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's a combination of both.
Okay.
He gets pulled out of retirement. He's done a lot of different movie posters, not only for Star Wars, but he was also famous for doing a lot of the Harry Potter movies, movie posters. He's done a number of different posters over the years. So, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's what I was looking for, was just looking for your guys' feedback as to what you might have thought, because I thought this was a very bold statement for a man who's very closely connected with the original trilogy, and I just can't see somebody saying this with his kind of history with Star Wars and not really meaning it. That's just me. So, but I'm obviously on the internal optimist when it comes to the new Star Wars brand. So, and I remain excited. So, So, I think it's been a great show, gentlemen, but I think it is time to wrap it up, and it's time for final thoughts. Okay, Brian B., I'm going to give you the honor of for leading us off in final thoughts tonight.
Wow, okay. Well, you kind of caught me off guard because I really didn't have a final thought lined up. But I will say that overall, I still have my hesitations about Deadpool. It's something that I'll continue to talk about as we move forward. I would also say that I know it might come as a shock to some of you, but I'm actually kind of looking forward to The Hateful Eight from Tarantino. I think it'll be a good movie. And the trailers for it that I've seen look pretty good. And it's kind of Tarantino carrying on the Western tradition of Westerns, because you just don't see Westerns done anymore.
Like Django.
So, I think I'll be pleasantly surprised. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I'm just talking about just the fact he's continuing the genre, so to speak. So I think it'll be a good movie.
Excellent. John Z, Dirty John Z, your final thoughts, sir.
My thoughts, since I'm going off of my Oscar list, I'd say the best locks right now, going off the Hateful Eight, Joy, Revenant, and Steve Jobs are probably like the three biggest locks for Best Picture. Anything other than that, the other movies I mentioned would probably just be more icing on the cake. I really want to see Mad Max Fury Road be a Best Picture nominee, just because I think we would need something to kind of shake up the last couple boring years of Best Picture nominees. We've all seen the same type of nominations, same indie films, same type of quote-unquote daring subject matter, but it would be nice to actually see a kind of a crowd pleaser, kind of something to go back to the reason why they expanded the category to more than five nominees, because they screwed up in 2008, because they did the exact same crap they've been doing for the past 4 years, and they need to nominate something that audiences enjoy, because that's the reason that they got as much flack they did in 2008, because does anybody watch The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Frost Nixon, or The Reader anymore? No, they watch The Dark Knight and WALL-E. Plain and simple. They screwed up, and they haven't learned from their lessons, and they're still doing the same avant-garde crap that got them in trouble the last time.
Excellent point, sir. Eckenbauer, final thoughts, sir.
All right, my final thoughts for today. You know, how far is too far for movies to stray from the comics? You know, you hear people, you know, say that they want to see something different. They want new and entertaining and this and that, but when you're doing things of like the DC or Marvel Universe, you know, what's okay to recreate, to put your own spin on things, or, you know, do you need to have that continuity of, you know, Superman came from Krypton and came to Earth, and, you know, do you want to have something else, like, you know, I don't know, like, something off the wall, like some of the conspiracy theory, I would say, for the comic universe on Facebook, say, like, you know, is Batman really the Joker, or is Batman really actually in Arkham, and all the villains are actually just fellow inmates, and it's everything that's happened in Gotham, and everything is just in his mind, you know, do we want to see that kind of stuff, or do we rather stick to the script, per se, that we've seen in all the comics?
That's a good point, and it's definitely a fine balance between what people know and love and those who don't mind taking an adventure, you know, taking something we own and love and putting a twist on it that maybe we've never thought of or gone with before. So that was an excellent final thought, sir. My final thought, again, just this confirmation by Drew Struzan. It's just another confirmation that I think we're going to see something bold. I think we're going to see something. You're going to see some real mythology added, I think, in the Star Wars storyline, if you will. I think you're going to see something that completely changes the scope from that, from Episode 7 on. It's literally, like I said, it's an awakening of the Force. It's something that happens that creates a cataclysm throughout the entire galaxy, and you're seeing, I think I'm beginning, just from what I'm reading, and spoiler alert, and I don't have time to play the clip, but I'm beginning to think they're starting to pull a little bit more of maybe King Arthur kind of mythology. You've kind of got the lightsaber that's being handed down yet again, and kind of got an Excalibur kind of a feel to it. You've got maybe even a little bit of Shakespeare thrown in with the Darth Vader helmet. So, and I think this is the third act of Anakin's life. I think this is going to be, you know, the first act of prequels was how he became Darth Vader. The second, the original trilogy, in reality, is how he, his redemption and becoming Anakin Skywalker and fulfilling his destiny. And the third act is going to be the fallout. It's going to be how does his children and his grandchildren deal with the fallout that he was Darth Vader and that he was this awful person for this period of time, and how they have to deal with the consequences of that. So, just could not be more excited again, and it just, we're getting closer and closer, and it's going to be a whole lot coming out. Ankh, hopefully you're up for some more Star Wars breaking news, because I got a feeling come September, we may have to do a couple specials.
Yeah.
So, all right, gentlemen, excellent show tonight. Guys, if, out there, if you want to reach us, you can reach us at Facebook, at facebook.com/4MidwestGuys. You can reach us at Twitter, at @4MidwestGuys. And you can also get us, reach us via email at it's 4MidwestGuys at gmail.com. So we'd love to hear from you. We're desperate to hear from you. We're a new podcast, and, you know, good, bad, and different. You love us, you hate us, what you like, what you didn't like, what you want to hear us talk about. We need to hear from you back, because it's one thing for us to critique ourselves, but you are our audience, and we want to hear back from you. So please reach out to us on our Facebook page, Twitter, email, whatever it is you'd like to get a hold of us. We'd be more than happy to hear from you and respond to you, I promise. So. For Ankebauer, for Brian B, and for John Z, have a good night.